possibility of a big pullout.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. We've all had a time in our lives, okay, a few times, when we were just so mad at something, we just got up and left. That's about where Google is in China. The search giant says hackers from inside that country tapped into company servers and stole company secrets. It says it could possibly stop operating in China. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
Google accuses Chinese hackers of not only stealing corporate secrets, but compromising the Gmail accounts of Chinese human rights activists. The company, whose motto is "Don't be evil," says it will review the feasibility of doing business in China. But already, Google fans in Beijing laid wreaths at the company office today, and many assume it's all but gone. Thomas Crampton is with the social media team at Ogilvy Public Relations in Hong Kong.
Google is walking away from the largest internet population in the world that is soon to overtake the United States in the level of e-commerce.
But it would not walk away a champion. Google is a distant second in the search wars behind a Chinese rival. In fact, most American.coms struggle in China. Here's internet commentator Kaiser Guo in Beijing.
We're talking about a company where their main domain name, Google.com, was something that most Chinese internet users just simply couldn't spell.
Still, it's rare for a giant multinational to take on official China. Why now? Many say Chinese censors are squeezing the life out of web companies that spread what Beijing considers inappropriate content. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
China said today it's curbing bank lending. Investors fear because of that, economic recoveries in other countries could be slower. That's got stocks a little off today. Asian shares closed lower, the Shanghai index by 3%, the Nikkei about 1.25%. European markets are mixed right now. Germany's economy shrank by 5% last year, but the DAX is higher today. On Wall Street yesterday, the S&P and NASDAQ lost about 1% or more. The Dow gave back 36 points to end the day at 10,627. We got the latest Obama administration progress report on its $787 billion economic stimulus. It says the plan's tax cuts and spending added about 2 percentage points to the fourth quarter GDP and created or saved 2 million jobs. The CEOs of four big banks will tell the bipartisan Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission what really happened to the financial system. The bankers have been preparing for the Washington meeting for weeks. We sent Marketplace's Elisa Roth to find out what people want to get from the commission.
The guys in the hot seat are a who's who of American banks. Lloyd Blankfein from Goldman Sachs, Jamie Dimon from J.P. Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley's John Mack, and B of A's new head, Brian Moynihan. Gary Townsend used to work as a banking regulator. Now he's an investor. He'd like to call his former colleagues to task.
I would like to hear about why regulators were not more active on the bank side at restraining the mortgage markets, why they allowed that to get so out of control and unregulated.
That's something Patricia McCoy wants to know, too. She wonders how we can be sure banks will constrain their risk in the future.
Why do we have any faith that regulators will be able to ride herd on them effectively in the future if they don't?
Good question. But those six Democrats and four Republicans who make up the panel had better watch out. James Cox, he teaches corporate and securities law at Duke, would like to turn the table around.
I'd like to have questions asked just exactly how Congress contributed to this crisis.
He says a lot of the trouble we've been in was because Congress didn't pay attention to things like subprime mortgages and warnings that there was a housing bubble. Ladies and gentlemen of the commission, take note. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
And by the way, at least two of those CEOs, Jamie Dimon and Brian Moynihan, will get to Washington by corporate jet.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by MassMutual, for 158 years providing policyholders with solutions to help meet their financial goals at massmutual.com. And by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing, online surveys, and event marketing. ConstantContact.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
It may be playoff season for pro football, but the real battle is being waged in the U.S. Supreme Court. Today, it takes up a case that on the surface is about who gets to make the NFL's official uniforms and merchandise, but there is a lot more at stake. Marketplace's Sam Eaton is with us live in our Los Angeles studio. Good morning, Sam.
Morning, Steve.
So what's the case all about?
Well, the case began when the National Football League formed an exclusive partnership with Reebok to be the sole provider of its official apparel. The problem with that was that another company, American Needle, already had individual deals with several NFL teams, deals that were nullified once the broader agreement was set in place. So American Needle sued on antitrust grounds.
So why, Sam, is this getting so much attention?
Well, it's about a lot more than just hats and jerseys. Depending on how it turns out, this case could change the way joint ventures like the NFL is allowed to do business. The question here is whether the NFL should be considered a single business entity or 32 separate teams working together. If the high court defines the NFL as one business, it becomes immune to the antitrust charges brought against it. But that ruling would affect a lot more than just these apparel deals. Here's University of Vermont law professor Michael McCann.
The National Football League Players Association is concerned that if the NFL is considered a complete single entity, then many of the rights that the Players Association has fought for, be it free agency, be it minimum salaries, be it other working conditions, would be in jeopardy.
Now, that's because once the current labor agreements expire next year, teams would be able to negotiate a new agreement as a unit. And that means they no longer have to compete with each other on things like player salaries and ticket prices.
And Sam, does this extend beyond just the NFL?
It certainly does. It's likely to affect other sports leagues from hockey to basketball, and major credit card companies like Visa and MasterCard could also feel the impacts. Like the NFL, they consist of a group of individual banks. And if they're considered separate businesses, they could be sued on the grounds of antitrust lawsuits.
Marketplace's Sam Eaton. Thanks.
Thanks.
Finally, neighbors in an affluent town around Knoxville, Tennessee, aren't very happy about one man's business proposition. David Perkins wants to convert his home into a duplex and start businesses that provide music lessons and fertility services. He goes before the Planning Commission tomorrow. Apparently, some of his neighbors don't appreciate his entrepreneurial spirit. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.